You are listening to the Happier at Work podcast, and I'm your host, Aoife O'Brien. This is the podcast for HR and business leaders. We talk about things like leadership, well-being at work, diversity and inclusion, and the future of work.
The first time I came across the concept of values was as part of my executive coaching course. And it was one of those massive aha revelations that changed my life. That's how important it was to me. That's how big it was to me, because I didn't know my values.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Happier at Work podcast. And this is an episode that's been a long time coming, and I'm so excited to share this week's episode with you. My guest today is Ariel O'Farrell, and we originally met, I think, before Christmas. And when I say met, I mean that in the kind of loosest terms, the way that we mean at the moment. We met online. We had a Zoom call, which was really fascinating. I think we have quite a similar interest and quite a similar background as well. Ariel set up her consulting business, Evolution Consulting, in 2006, and she focuses very much on change management and organizational design. She has written two books with a third one on the way, so it's due out in September of this year. And the focus of our discussion today is very much in line with one of the books that she has written, which is all about values and the fact that values are not just for the wall plaque. The importance of values ties in very much with the research that I did for my dissertation last year, where typically people tend to match skills and abilities with the demands of the role in an organization, when really the focus should be on matching values, because you can teach people new skills and you can teach people new abilities. But you can't teach people to behave in different ways, for the most part. So I really hope you enjoy today's episode. As always, I will do a wrap-up at the end of some of the key points. And I'd love to know what is one thing that you will do differently as a result of listening. If you want to get involved in the conversation, I will be posting about this episode on LinkedIn, and I would love to know your thoughts. Welcome, Ariel, to the Happier at Work podcast. I'm delighted to have you as my guest today. Do you want to give people a little bit of a flavour of your background and how you got to where you are today?
Yes, I'd love to, Aoife. Thank you very much for having me on the show. So my background, I originally did science. I liked biology, and I thought, yeah, science would be for me. And I ended up doing physics and maths, which wasn't exactly in the biology space. I kind of pursued it and kept going. When I finished college, I went to Australia. My sister lived in Australia, so I was kind of off to see the world and off to see her. So I ended up getting into the maths from my degree got me a role in Commonwealth Bank of Australia. So I got into finance, financial services. And I suppose that's kind of where my lifelong fascination with the human and management and what inspires people came from, that experience, because there was two managers, one who was very popular and the other one not so much. So I was just fascinated by what did one do that kind of engaged people, and what did the other person do that sort of repelled people to a degree. And of course, you don't really think that that's going to, you just think it's a passing fad, if you like. And so I kind of ended up going, I had a green card to America. So I moved to Boston then, and I worked in financial services in Boston. It turned out that the interest in the management wasn't that a passing fad. And I was kind of there, I was quite fascinated with how do you get people to engage in the work? How do you get them to deliver to the standards that are required? I worked in the funds industry, which is extremely, somebody likened it to a newspaper. It's the same work every single day. What's different is the numbers or the words. And it's very tight. There's a deadline every single day, and accuracy is paramount. And so you're living with this constant every single day. You're living with this pressure to perform. And so not everybody's going to perform to that level. So I was just always fascinated with how do you match the training and the skills and the capabilities of the person with what the business needs. And I moved quite quickly into management, and I managed my own team. I had my own team of people, which was really interesting. And again, was sort of some of the the learnings and the insights as a manager around, okay, I've said that three times, they still haven't understood what I said, maybe I should try a different way. You know, some of those insights. And then the company merged with another company in Chicago, and I was one of two people internally asked to work with an external consultant around redesigning the organization, which again was really interesting, because when you work in a big organization, you don't recognize that a lot of your work is done within the boundaries of the organization and the processes of the organization, because they're quite invisible. So it was working on that project so early on in my career was really interesting to understand how we behave within the organizational structure without being aware of it. I moved back to Ireland then in 99, and I moved into training and development. So I worked with ABBMY for 6 years and started off with the technical, and then they were, you know, all those people we promoted into management, would you teach them how to manage? And then I got involved in competencies and behaviors and the softer side of it. It's not all about the technical knowledge. There's other things that go into whether somebody's successful or not. And I got into that whole space. And then in true O'Farrell fashion, there was that need to kind of go off and see if I could set up my own company or run my own work for myself. So I set up Evolution Consulting in 2006. And so a lot of leadership development, executive coaching, org design, change management. And I suppose that change management piece was always there. The sort of, how do you, again, because of that fascination of how do you connect with the person so they get on board with something. I suppose I always had that natural tendency to kind of get people connected and kind of go, okay, I'll give it a try. And then you kind of, the change happened as a result. And so, yeah, that's kind of over the course of the years. I also kind of enjoy writing, and we'll be talking about my book, the Values book. So I have also enjoyed writing. And so in 2011, the itch to write was really taking hold of me. So and because values had been such a huge thing for me as part of my own journey as an executive coach, when I hit upon the idea of the book should be on values, I was like, that's it. That's what the book should be about. And it really flowed. Like, it didn't take very long to write. It took longer to figure out the topic of the book than to write the book almost. And then my second book came out last year around smart object setting. And then the new book is coming out in September.
Yeah,
to give you brilliant. A whirlwind of my life today.
Yes, and today, Ariel, specifically what we're going to talk about is this idea of values. And I suppose to give a little bit of my own background, I wasn't really aware of the concept, or maybe the concept, but maybe not the terminology of values until I did my own coaching diploma. And discovered that there are these things called values, and it's how we live. And it came up again then when I did my research for my master's dissertation as a contributing factor to this concept of fit and how we feel a sense of fit or belonging in an organization, and values being a really crucial part of that. So I thought it was interesting that it was kind of coming up again. And I thought this concept of values must actually be really, really important, and came across your book. And then I think we connected after that. And, you know, I've read your book, and I just thought I can see how the writing came very easily, because the book really flows. Like, it just kind of, it's very coherent in its approach, and it's very comprehensive as well. But maybe for those people who don't really know, like, what are values or what do they mean in the organizational context, maybe we can talk a little bit about that first.
Yeah, absolutely. In the book, I describe, you know, what is a value, and what I describe a value as is that concept or that thing that we feel is worthwhile putting extra effort into, and that we expect ourselves and, crucially, other people to live up to.
Yeah. And that's what I thought was very interesting, is it's the expectations we place on ourselves, but kind of maybe almost unconsciously, we place those expectations on other people. And we assume that the things that are important to us, the things that we value, the things that we think we're willing to give that extra time to, that other people are willing to give that extra time to as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really is the important piece, is that you know, we can understand, oh yeah, I expect myself to live up to my values. But of course, we also expect other people to live up to our values. But of course, if I'm expecting myself and everybody else to live up to my values, they are equally expecting everybody else and themselves to live up to their values. And of course, all our values definitions are not the same. Our actual values aren't the same. And then also, our definitions of what those values might be may not also be the same. So even with somebody that we are get on quite well with, and we have a very, you know, we might have share similar values, there may be times whereby my definition of that, my value of, let's just take respect as one, and somebody else's definition of respect might be slightly at odds. And even with somebody who has a similar value or has the same value but a different definition, even that can cause a little bit of tension or a little bit of friction. And so we expect, it's not just that the values are the same. We expect other people to have our own values, but we also expect them to have our own definitions of them as well. Which is why it's so important in an organization. It's so important to define what do we mean by these values? What are the boundaries of these values? So it's not just what's the value? It's what specifically do we mean about this value? And what do we not mean by this value?
Yes. Yeah.
Where is the boundary of it? Can also be important. And I think it's, you know, because you go through such a process to get values in the first place. I think the executive team are going, oh, please, we don't have to define it now as well, do we? But it is really important around, it's not just enough to say it's respect. It's respect in this way, or this is what we mean by respect, or this is what we include, or this is what we don't include with respect.
I really liked the example that you use in the book, Ariel, of this concept of fairness. And, you know, we might think, or I might think I have this value of fairness, but if you really drill into it, actually, what I value is people treating me fairly. And I don't think about how I treat other people or how the world treats other people. And how, if you, what really are your values are the things that can be universally applied. So, and equally with respect, or similar to respect, this idea of fairness can be defined in slightly different ways according to different people as well. So I thought that was, that's an interesting way to look at it, is like, it needs to be universally applied, as opposed to, I want people to treat me fairly, because I think everyone wants to be treated fairly, treated with respect, but it's how you apply that to other people as well.
Yeah, and fairness is a very interesting one. It's what I refer to in the book as it can be a position. Some people do have true value of fairness, but some people have a positional value of fairness.
That's so it.
It's fair. It's fair so long as it's fair, just after fair to me and just before fair to anybody else, is what I define in the book as that positional fairness. But interestingly, even where we do truly believe in fairness, our definition of it can be quite different, difficult, or can cause issues. Because I worked a couple of years ago with a company that had a value of fairness, and they truly, I knew the company well, they truly actually did have a value of fairness. But interestingly, their definition of it was being fair to the individual without being fair to the rest of the team. So if an individual was having problems, so, you know, there could be stuff going on at home or that, they would bend over backwards to be fair to that individual at the expense of everybody else who had to pick up for the fact that this person was having troubles or issues or concern or whatever was going on. And what they were finding was this pattern was that the rest of the team was getting quite disgruntled because their definition of fairness was only to the individual.
Yeah.
And so even that was really interesting when I pointed this out. You know, it's like, well, what about the other people and how are you being fair to them? And they were like, oh, we never even thought about it. We were so concentrating on being fair to this person, we never even thought about who is picking up the costs of that. And how were we being fair on them? So that was really, really interesting. And you know, they were an organization that truly, hand on heart, I would say, they really did believe in the value of fairness. You know, they really did walk the walk of it. And yet, because they didn't have a definition of it, or they had never really discussed what do we mean by fairness and are we being fair to all, that it was actually tripping them up.
Yeah, it's so interesting, I think. And I think one of the other things that came out of this, and I know certainly you know, one of the things that maybe prompted me to be interested in this is experiences that I've had at work, and this, the whole concept of fit, and maybe I wasn't in the right environment. I didn't really fit in. And it was a thing about values. And I know, Ariel, we've had a conversation before about this where, you know, I saw it as this is a clash of values. I need to get out of here. Whereas I think your approach is a bit more, this is the clash of values. Okay, now I understand what's going on and I can deal with it. So yeah, it's kind of different approaches there, I suppose. But what I'm trying to get to here is this idea of conflict, and where there is a mismatch of values, it's a key driver of conflict in organizations, and it can be avoided if we can get that values piece correct.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, like yourself, Eva, the first time I came across the concept of values was as part of my executive coaching course. And it was one of those, you know, those massive aha revelations that changed my life. You know, that's how important it was to me. That was how big it was to me. Because I didn't know my values. I didn't know what they were. I didn't know the concept of it. But I would find myself coming into conflict and tension, you know, not necessarily big conflict, but low level conflict, or something wasn't quite right here. There's a friction there. And when I came to values and understood, I was like, oh, that's what's going on here. And it was so impacting on me in a positive way, positive impact on me, and just made so much sense. And I was much more comfortable in myself. I didn't have to get so upset. I didn't have to get so worked up. I didn't have to get so bothered by this friction that I couldn't explain. It was like, I don't need to work, because that's what that is. There's the conflict. Well, what happened, because it was such a big thing for me, in my coaching with people, I would inevitably bring up values. So I would do a lot of work with people on values. And what I noticed was that when they understood their own values and understood the conflict that was going on in the workplace, typically in the workplace, as part of executive coaching, what I noticed was that they got a huge amount of relief around, I understand why this is happening now. I don't need to bother with that. I don't need to pour my energy into trying to figure that out anymore. And it frees up a huge amount of time and energy that you can put in other things and apply in a much more effective way. And so, you know, a lot of, like, sometimes the differences are so big, or they're so fundamental, that it is, you know, it's actually, I understand this. I know what it is now, but I still need to remove myself from this, because I don't, you know, it's just, yes, I could continue on or whatever, but why bother? You know, it can be that big. But for a lot of people, it's the kind of, okay, I get that. I understand that now. It's not so detrimental that I can, you know, I might have 60% crossover with them. It's this 40% or 30%. That's causing the friction. But now that I understand it, I can manage it sufficiently now that I don't need to kind of leave the situation. But the conflict piece was really interesting. I personally think it was my favorite chapter in the book, actually, because there's that friction or that conflict if we don't live up to our own values. You know, that the friction that can happen if I make a decision and I know it's not quite right because it's not in keeping with my values, that causes a friction, which I call intra-conflict, because it's within us. Then we can have friction between ourselves and somebody else, whereby, you know, there might be values clashes or definitions or expectations of they're not meeting my values, I'm not meeting theirs. So there can be those frictions. And then you can get sort of within the team. And then you can get between teams as well. So even one of the things that I write about in the book as well is, you know, a lot of times companies will have five or six values, but do we tell them in the order in which we expect them to be ranked?
Yeah.
So, you know, if we've got, I don't know, our clients are our number one, and we've got respect, or we've got fairness or something like that, you know, are we... actually respect being a good one there. If the client is being disrespectful to us, you know, we've got a situation where we've got two values that are in conflict. You know, our client is very important to us, and we've got a value of respect. What order do we deal with them? So if we do it in the order of the client first, respect second, then we will just take we'll accept the poor treatment. If we do respect first and then client second, then we go, well, actually, they're not treating us in a respectful way. So we need to have that conversation. So we get different outcomes depending on how we rank them. or how we order them. But also then different teams can rank them in different ways. So if you're the client servicing team, you're going to do the, you're going to rank the customers number one as most important. If you're, I don't know, HR, or you're the operations team, you might say, well, actually, respect is more important. And so I'm going to rank that, our team is going to rank that first. So even the order in which different teams might rank them, they might kind of say that they uphold them all, but they're ranking them in different ways, and that can lead to conflict. And again, you get these comments of like, oh, and respect is so important, and look, they're not, you know, and it's like, well, actually, what's going on is they're ranking them in a different way to you. So they're not being they might not be disrespectful, but they're not ranking them in the same order. And so we're getting different outcomes depending on what order we apply our values. So a lot goes into it.
Yeah. And I don't think I'd heard of this concept of actually ranking the values previously. And I think, you know, it's so interesting how it's, I mean, it's fundamental to, like, exactly what you were saying, this conflict and causes of conflict in organizations. So it's about, I suppose, maybe taking a step back in the conversation and saying, first of all, do you know what your values are? Are your values that are the values, I think they use the term stated values, are they the same as what is the lived experience of the people in the organization? So, you know, is there a difference there between what you're saying and what's actually happening? And I know certainly you have examples that we shared offline of companies where they don't include something as part of the values, but it's a very clear value in terms of the way they behave and the way they make decisions. Then there's so the experience, and then there's the, well, how do you demonstrate that behavior, and how do we actually get people to follow, like, what we actually expect of them in terms of behavior as well?
And there's I five different areas of that. it is very complex, because a lot of times, and in actual fact, with the book, and the book was written in 2011, and I picked Enron back in the day when Enron
barely knew who Enron was.
I know, you know, and Enron had a value of like integrity, and clearly Enron is not run with any major integrity. So some of this goes to, for the executive team, how do they come to the conclusion as to what their values are? And so, and that takes time, because in reality, a lot of times, if we're living our values, we make decisions through our values, and we behave in ways that are consistent with our values, and we make decisions through them. So if we don't know what our values are, or if we have different sets of values, you know, that's going to cause conflict. Again, people, we're, as an executive team, we're telling people these are our values, and yet we make decisions divorced from them. So it takes time for the executive team to really engage with what are their own personal values, because each of those are going to feed into what the company's values are in terms of what's really lived, and then kind of look at how do we shortlist these? What, you know, how do we actually identify ones, and what do we really take into consideration when we are making decisions? Because those are what our value, those are bringing us closer to identifying what our values are. And that does take time, and it takes self-awareness. So it takes a lot of self-awareness on behalf of the individuals and the executive team. And then the executive team as a team, are they really going to be honest and open and have that level of a conversation that is a truthful conversation, to really say, yes, these are our actual values. And we said this offline as well, but, you know, a lot of times when people talk of the word values, they assume they are good. They assume there's a goodness in values, that they are inherently good.
Yeah.
And there is no inherent goodness about values. Somebody can have a value of efficiency, and, you know, there's nothing inherently good or bad. It's fairly neutral. But they're really driving, you know, value of everything has to be efficient, and they put a lot of time and effort in being efficient. I've come across people, I've worked with people where actually avoiding conflict was a big value for them. Yeah. They put a lot of time and energy and effort and expected to not engage in conflict. And you might think, it's not a value. And you go, let me tell you, this had a huge impact on how this person, you know, their energy, what was important to them, where they put their time, how they made decisions was very much driven by, this is what I expect, this is what I do, I avoid conflict. And there's, you know, that's not a good, you know, a good or bad thing. Another one that organizations often have is a commerciality, like a driving commerciality. So again, some organizations have a value of commerciality, some won't. And again, you might think, well, commerciality isn't a good thing, or isn't a, you know, that feels like there's a, that's not a positive attribute. But the point being is, some organizations, it's all about the commerciality, and that's what drives them. So that's a huge value for them, and they should call it out. So it's having the honesty to kind of go, well, actually, this is what we think is really important. This is what it, this is where we focus our time and effort, and this is where we expect other people to focus their time and effort, and this is how we make decisions through the lens of commerciality. So having that understanding of that values aren't necessarily inherently good, and freeing for the executives to free themselves up from that assumption. And then also really having those honest, what is really important to us and what really are our values. And those should be the actual values, that you're getting into the heart of what the actual values are of the organization. And those ideally are what should be stated on the wall.
That's what
they should be calling out, instead of these, I've heard a term, it's kind of come up about values around these aspirational values.
People have said,
these are aspirational. In the book, I refer to them as stated values. But for the leadership team, it's, there's no point in wasting your time stating aspirational values that nobody is ever going to achieve or is ever going to look at, because everybody's going to be going, we're not going to do anything. We're not actively moving towards them. We're not actively including them in our decision-making or trying to bring them into our decision-making. So it's like, why would you aspire to something that you're not doing anything to move towards?
Yes, exactly.
So why not instead articulate what our actual values are and then build culture around there and attract people that resonates with them? Because when we set aspirational values and we talk about them and we recruit people and we go, oh, these are our values, and then people come into the organization and they realize these aren't being lived. These are stated on the wall, but they're not being lived. It's back to that conflict piece. It's that friction of like, this isn't right. This isn't how you live this value. The value of fairness, this isn't how you live fairness. Yet it's stated on the wall. So there's effort and energy and a vulnerability to the leadership team articulating what their real values are. And that's scary in itself, because there's a vulnerability with your peers and your the even vulnerability within yourself around, I think I value integrity. It turns out you don't at all. Integrity is a good value.
Everyone wants to have integrity as a value, because it's associated with this good thing. Like, there's a few things that I'd love to pick up on there. Maybe we go back to this idea of attraction, which is one of the more recent points that you made. And for me, like, that was something that was really stand out in the research that I did, is using values as a way to attract people. And the fact that we often look at skills and we often look to hire people for the specific skills that they have. And, you know, I think to a certain degree and maybe for very specific industries for very specific professions, that it is important to have those qualifications. But for the most part, when you attract people into an organization, you should be attracting people who are like you and who behave like you, who have similar values. I always talk about like this idea of values alignment and diversity of thought. So you want to bring that diverse thinking into the organization, but you can also train people to do pretty much anything. You know, you don't have to hire people who already have the skills. You can actually provide that training for them, whether that's internal or external. So that's kind of what I'm thinking around the attraction piece. Any thoughts to add on that?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with you. Whenever I do recruitment or working with managers on recruitment, I would always be saying recruit for fit and train for skills and knowledge, because that's the easiest thing in the world to train people up to invest in their knowledge and their skills. They're fairly easy things to do. It's an awful lot harder to get somebody to adjust sufficiently to fit in with the culture. If they don't fit in, if they have different values, no amount of persuading them is going to get them to fit in. And in terms of energy and effort and time and all those types of resources, there's a lot of lost energy and effort that goes into trying to persuade somebody who doesn't have a similar value, who doesn't have a good value fit, trying to persuade them that they should behave in this way. A huge amount of energy and effort for the manager or their peers or, you know, whoever it is that's trying to do that. And very uncomfortable for the individual as well, because it's not a good fit for that. You know, nobody wants to go in and to be, obviously we adjust ourselves somewhat in the workplace, and we adjust ourselves somewhat in the outside as well, and with our friends and family, because you know we have to kind of rub along together. So we give and take a bit, so we adjust slightly, you know. But you want to be adjusting in sort of little ways that still fits with the kind of integrity of you, the authenticity of you. Not mad, 30% adjustments, or 40% adjustments from what who you truly are. Like, that's too big an adjustment. People can't sustain that. The individual can't sustain it, and when I say the organization, I mean the managers, their peers, the people working with them. They can't sustain that kind of constant trying to cajole, whereas it's an awful lot easier to send somebody on a course for knowledge,
yes, absolutely,
and even for skills, and give them some feedback than it is to kind of if somebody isn't, you have a value of fairness, and somebody fundamentally doesn't really get fairness, no amount of persuading them is going to change their thought process to make them behave that way.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. If you'd like to know more about what I can do for your business, please head over to my website, happieratwork.ie, where I have more details on the services that I offer. I offer various different types of things for organizations like yours. I offer speaking, coaching, consulting, with a huge focus on data and analytics and how to use data to make better people decisions. I have a couple of ongoing public projects at the moment in relation to researching employee well-being, first-time managers, and I will be making those results publicly available as well. So if you would like to get access to that, head on over to my website. We touched on this idea as well, that like there's no such thing as, say, good values or bad values. There's no moral component to it. There are some aspirational values, and I'm using that maybe in a different way than you mentioned earlier. Things like authenticity, vulnerability, honesty, integrity came up. You know, those kinds of things came up in the book as well. And maybe they're the kind of things that we all wished that we had those, because they are kind of quite aspirational values. And I suppose where I'm going with this is that some organizations, are some organizations, should all organizations have those types of values? Like things like respect, things like integrity. Is there just kind of a baseline of value types that all organizations should have?
Yeah, that's a really good theoretical question. It's almost like a philosophical question.
A whole podcast episode just debating that, and it would go for a few hours.
It sure would be fascinating. From a philosophical perspective, one could say, yes, if the human was perfect, we should.
Yeah.
We should have those. But the human isn't perfect. We're not perfect. One would hope that people would treat each other with some level of respect, just because we're human. And yet we've proven to ourselves over and over and over again that as humans, we don't necessarily treat people with respect. Yeah. And that's almost that, the philosophically, theoretically, as humans, should we have that baseline? I would say, well, I'd like to think we should. But in reality, there are some organizations that the type of people it attracts, they absolutely will have those baseline values as just a way of being. And then there are other organizations where they don't, they don't believe in it. They don't buy into it or whatever. It doesn't cross their mind. Doesn't inform their thinking and their thoughts and their actions. And so they don't behave in those ways. For those companies, I would say, saying you have these values when you don't will cause that friction of people come in and go, well, this isn't my experience. And so, them telling me they've had these values, they've lied to me. So, there's an inherent inauthenticity or an untruth there. You're doing it because it feels like we should, but actually it's not what people are going to experience. You're going to have a constant churn of people. Because people will come in and go,
it doesn't do what it says on the tin, essentially.
And keep in mind, there clearly are people in the world. If there are organizations of 50, 100, 2,000 people that buy into that culture, that value, different values, whatever, then there must be people out there that will connect with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So it's this different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
And I think that there's almost, I guess it goes back to that, we inherently think values are good things, and so therefore they should be these positive, uplifting, but if they're not, then, do we need to be honest with ourselves around what is important to us? And I think another one which is interesting is trust. People, we sort of, at a fundamental level, as human, we want to trust people and we want to be trusted and we want to be trustworthy. But there are some people who value trust.
Mm.
And the rest of us, we don't value it. It's we want it.
Mm. But we're not willing to extend it,
we're not
maybe.
We don't put in the effort, or we don't expect myself and other people to always act in a trustworthy way.
Okay.
That's a higher level of a standard than, well, there's this concept of trust or whatever, and I need to be trustworthy enough. Being trustworthy enough and really
going above and beyond.
Over and above and beyond is not everybody has it. And again, with honesty, it's another one. There are people who have a driving value of honesty where it's like, God, they will be honest, even if you don't want their honesty.
Yes.
There's a drive, they have to be honest.
Yeah.
And then there's other people, well, they'll bend the truth. A level of honesty within a boundary of,
white
plus
lies.
Or minus 10% is fine. Do you know what I mean? And it's not that they're, if you were constantly lying to them, they'd be going, I don't want to be constantly lied to, and I don't want to, if it's in and around the truth or whatever, that's sufficient.
Yeah.
As opposed to somebody with a driving value of honesty where it's like, it has to be absolutely crystal clear honesty. It is this exact honesty almost. It is this. And these are different standards. So I suppose going to the philosophical question, within organizations, I suppose there's a baseline of a certain amount of integrity of people dealing with people respectfully and with integrity, but they don't mean that they're our values. They're not, there's a baseline of treating humans that does need to be there to keep people, but that doesn't mean we escalate them up to being held up as our values. That makes sense. It's a really good question.
Makes total sense. But it kind of brings me on to the next point that I wanted to make. And that was, are some companies just toxic? So let's say if you have a company where they don't show respect to people, they don't have integrity, Or is it a case, like if I think of previous companies that I've worked in, some I would probably brand as just completely toxic and others were just not a good fit for me. Therefore, yeah. I felt that sense of conflict, that sense of, I don't quite fit here. I don't really belong. Yeah. But are there some companies that are just not a good place to work, for want of a better word?
Well, and I suppose as we're, as you're asking that question, there's splitting out. There are, I suppose, known illnesses, I guess, that will lead to a person being toxic in the workplace. So, for example, narcissism,
Machiavellianism,
not just throwing the word out. I don't like them, so therefore I'm going to call them a narcissist. But truly, you know, somebody who truly is a narcissist or whatever. Like, if one is working with somebody who is in that space or whatever, it is going to be a very toxic environment. Okay, leaving aside those, even that group, those sorts of organizations, those sorts of cultures, organizations or teams where that might exist, there are, I suppose, it's a really good question around, is there a that toxicity can be there. To me, it comes from, and again, I suppose it's always perceptions, and there will be people that will thrive in it or whatever. There are people who will be repelled by that kind of toxic environment. And then there's people where, as you said, that some organizations, it's not that it's particularly toxic, it just doesn't work for me. It's just not a good fit for me. But those organizations where they're sort of like quite dysfunctional, I think they do exist, and I think a huge amount of it is that there's a huge lack of awareness. Again, that self-awareness of the leadership team. They are quite divorced from the human, I would say, that they're and themselves as humans, and their peers as humans, and the rest of the organization as humans. They've got their own agendas, and they're only interested in their own agendas, and they're driven by that. And they don't have the self-awareness. Like usually these organizations, because organizational cultures come from the people at the top, and nothing I've experienced would indicate otherwise. Everything kind of points to that. So usually these organizations, the toxicity is coming from the people at the top, and there's that lack of self-awareness and self-understanding, and they're going along with the environment. You might get one or two people in that executive team who are going, I don't really like this, but they're not strong enough within themselves to turn around and go, I'm not doing this.
They're kind of just going with the flow. Like, this is how things are done around here. This is how you get stuff done. Yeah. This is what's valued in this organization.
Absolutely. And so therefore I will replicate it, and I can live with it sufficiently in the short term, medium term. I can live with it, that I can go with it. And it does bring in some level of emotional intelligence there in the sense of, in emotional intelligence terms, there's this idea of independence. So independence of thought, independence of action, independence of emotions. So somebody with a low independence and low assertiveness will go along with this behavior because it's easier for them to go along with it than it is to make a scene or to stand up or whatever. Yeah. And that's where, all it takes is for a good man to do nothing. There can be people who are quite nice in it or whatever, but they're not strong enough within themselves to go, this isn't right. And they just, they might have that low independence and assertiveness, and so they go with it. And those people, I would always, how I describe them, they'll blow in the wind. Whatever way the wind is blowing, they'll go, okay, I'll adjust. And for going, bringing it back to the values, what you probably find is that they don't know what their values are. They have no kind of conscious awareness of their values. They probably do feel a tension somewhere in their bodies. So they know it's not quite right. So it's not that they don't know it. It's not at some level that they don't know it. And it's not at some level that they don't feel it. But they don't know it enough, and they're not willing to take the time and the effort. And it really is effort now to learn about yourself sufficiently,
yeah,
and to deal with the realizations of some of what you've allowed happen.
Yeah.
Again, you've got that human justification that can go on, that we're very good at justifying. Well, it's okay, because if I didn't do this, somebody else would. And so it perpetuates itself. And then, you know, it takes a very strong person to kind of acknowledge and recognize, actually, I played a part in creating that environment, and I didn't need to. So a lot of times we don't want to admit that to ourselves, because that's too painful.
Yeah. That we had some contributing factor to creating this mess, whatever it might be. Another, I think, interesting idea is this idea of, like, how once we have established what the values are, that this is the behavior that's expected in the organization, I think the next step is how to hold people to account. Like, how do you drive that sense of accountability? How do you have those tough conversations where people are not behaving in line with expectations in this, you know, if you think about organizational objectives, it's the what versus the how, and how people are behaving. And, you know, I always think of, like, someone is performing well, but they're leaving a wake of destruction behind them, and they haven't built good relationships with their peers. They're stepping over people, they're claiming work as their own, all of that kind of stuff. Any thoughts on how to hold people accountable for that? Because I think that's maybe something that managers struggle with as well, is having those conversations where people are not behaving in line with expectations.
Yeah, it's a really great question, and a very, very common question that comes up. And it's interesting, because this starts, you start to get into the performance management area, and how do you kind of link performance and behavior and reward and all that type of thing. And it's really interesting, because having worked with several clients designing performance management processes, and then you get into the, like, and how are you going to reward and the bonus, you know, if they pay bonuses and that, and, well, what percentage are you putting on the results, and the what, and what percentage are you putting on the behaviors, the how? And they're going about 100% on the what, and 0%, and you're going, maybe, you know, would you start with, and I throw it out, I almost do it to wind them up. So it's 50-50, and they're looking at you going, not a chance, cereal is a 50-50. You might get companies who'll go 70-30. Yeah. And again, that the 70% of the bonus will be on the what they deliver, and 30% will be about the how. So again, it's this inherent, you know, we are a for-profit business. We do need to make it, but we need to deliver. And again, a lot of executive teams are very focused on the delivery, because that's how they got up the ladder, because they've delivered. And so that's part of a lot of their makeup. You know, this idea of, like, holding back 30 or 40% because of the how they go about it is anathema almost to them. And one client I was working with, and I think they wanted it 80-20, and who was a senior individual, a role model, was sort of like, the 20% of my bonus isn't worth it to bother putting any effort in.
Wow.
So even though the business owner was kind of thinking, oh, that's a sufficient chunk to get them to buy into it, and they were like, it's nowhere near enough to get me to bother to change.
Wow.
So there's this inherent tension between rewarding, and what do we reward, and what do we promote?
Yeah.
And so this is where that whole competency framework and the competencies and the setting objectives around the how, the behavioral pieces, becomes really important. And being able to articulate it in a way, what's the business impact of this? Because what's really interesting is, you know, you talk to companies and they're going, oh, well, you know, and it's often not the what, it's the how that's driving them nuts about performance. It's always the how. I've yet to come across an organization who says it's the what. But yet, oftentimes managers they're not comfortable in having those conversations. But though the how competencies, the behavioral competencies, there are business reasons why they're important. And so it's articulating it, what's the business impact of this? And it's interesting, using trust, for example, I've actually worked with people where there was an issue with trust, and that's a real behavioral, and it's often a value as well. Where they were, I have somebody who behaves in a way that isn't worthy of trust, and they were like, how am I going to set an objective around that?
Okay,
spaced it out and we worked it out and we actually got an objective designed using SMART. We got an objective designed where they go, I could have that conversation. That conversation I could have.
Yeah.
So there are ways of doing it, but managers do need to be upskilled in it. You know, you do need the competency framework, or I use role dimensions, this concept of role dimensions, which is kind of a hybrid. It's kind of a step beyond competencies. But, you know, the competency, the behavioral competencies need to be designed. The values need to be reflected. They need to be captured. Again, this goes back to the definitions of what our values mean. And so by having those definitions, you can cross-reference them with the competencies around, are they encapsulated in the competencies, in the behavioral competencies? And then upskill the managers to be able to really have those, articulate why do these behaviors matter? And if they do matter, then in what way do we develop them in people? And being able to so that the managers are upskilled in being able to have those, the doing the diagnosis, the having the conversation, the creating the objective to develop them. It's a developmental objective. And then to kind of coach them through how to actually behave in those ways, you know, what those ways are.
Yeah, what the indicators or the milestones indicators even might be are, along the way. Yeah. I think just in terms of like summing up everything that we've spoken about, I feel like maybe we haven't explicitly said why values are important and what is the here's a great question for you, Ariel. What's the business impact of not knowing the values?
Yeah, that is an excellent question, and I'm delighted I gave you the words first. To me, the business impact comes down to the energy and how we use our energy in an organization. Okay, and if we are using when people are happy, when people in an organization, which is perfect for your podcast.
Exactly. Happier at work. Well, when people are happier at work,
when they are content in work, they are in flow, right? When they are in flow, they are doing the work of the business, right? They're focused in on getting their work done. They're getting chunks of work done. They're progressing. They're progressing the work of the business or whatever, right? When they are unhappy, when they're less happier at work, their energy gets distracted to the conflicts, to the low level frictions, to the interpersonal, to the kind of why that isn't sitting right with them. Okay. And so when there's this disconnect between what we say our values are and the decisions we make, or we, you know, our stated values and how we're behaving, or the individual's expectations in their own, you know, even in organizations that don't articulate their values, people still have their own values and they still have their own expectations that they and other people live up to their values. Okay. And when people don't live up to them, it ends up they get distracted. They end up going, why aren't they? And the end is with this. When people are the blah, 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 they are not doing the work of the business.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Their energy and their focus is going into this low-level friction that they can't, you know, if they're not articulated, they can't understand what it is. It's not articulated for them. And if it is articulated but isn't being lived up to, they go, look, they're not doing it. They're telling us they value respect and look how they're treating us.
Yeah.
And so they end up, the energy ends up getting diverted. And that's why, to me, why values are so important. Because if we can articulate them and we can align with them and we can live with them and we can make decisions sufficiently and we attract in people who buy into them sufficiently, right? We get an organization where people aren't diverting their attention away from the work of the business. That frees them up to go, right, let's just get on and do this and get this done. And can you get rid of it 100%? No. But can you cut it in half or can you reduce it down substantially, that friction? Yes. That to me is why they're so important and why they're so powerful.
So it's, if I'm kind of hearing you correctly, I love this concept of energy and I'd love to research that more. Like, I wonder, could you do some scientific stuff around it? And I know on a previous podcast episode with Jennifer Dowling, we talked about this concept of energy more probably from the individual perspective and how you manage your energy throughout the day. But it goes from energy, and if you're diverting your energy away from getting the job done, then it has an impact on the time that you spend.
Yes.
And ultimately on the money. So you're you're underperforming.
Yes.
You're spending less time doing the work that needs to be done, or you're trying to make up time and then you're losing energy because you're doing longer hours. And ultimately it affects the bottom line because you're underperforming, you're not performing to the best of your ability, and you're maybe not willing to perform better because you feel this sense of conflict, whether it's in yourself or with other people. So it's really, really interesting from that perspective. And I said, I would love to do more research around energy values and the impact that has. Ariel, if people want to connect with you, what is the best way they can do that?
The best way is LinkedIn. So Ariel O'Farrell, I think I'm the only Ariel O'Farrell on LinkedIn. So I'd be delighted to connect people on LinkedIn. And also my website is evolutionconsulting.ie. So people can also sign up for my email. My
subscription.
Newsletter. Subscription.
Yeah, newsletter.
And then also I am also on Facebook on Evolution Consulting and also Ariel O'Farrell Books. And then my books are available on Amazon. So values, not just for the office wall plaque, how personal and company values intersect. And then Smart Objective Setting for Managers, which is the one I brought out last year. And then my new one, which is The Manager's Dilemma, How to Empower Your Team's Problem Solving, will be out in September of this year.
Brilliant.
They're all available on Amazon.
I can't wait to get stuck into that new one that I've really, really enjoyed your previous two books. Ariel, the question I ask everyone who comes on the podcast, what makes you happier at work?
Yes, I'm waiting for this one now, Aoife. two things. Am I allowed two things? One is one of my happiest times is working with a client on diagnosing exactly what is going on within their organization. So to me, it's all around the overall organizational performance, the business performance, and the impact on the business and the bottom line. But there's loads of different things that go into that and around the culture. Is it the culture? Is it the leadership? Is it capabilities? Is it the organization and how it's designed? So that diagnosis piece I love, because you're trying to peel back and go, what's going on here now? What's really going on? And then having designed the interventions and implemented the interventions, the other piece that I love is when you get to the stage where the energy is, the momentum of change is happening and people are getting better outcomes. They're getting better outcomes and they go, oh, I get this now. I see why this is a better way of doing this, or I see how this all has worked together to get us these much better outcomes. I love that bit as well.
Brilliant. Yeah. So it's like, it's the diagnosis and then the impact that have and the aha moments that clients have.
That's it.
Love that. Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, you have to do the bits in between, but that's the real, where I get my real kicks now. The diagnosis and then the seeing the outputs happening. Yeah.
Being realized. But I absolutely loved the conversation today, Ariel. I probably could have gone on for another few hours talking about values, and there's so much value in that book as well, specifically on values. So if anyone is interested, definitely check out that book. I'll put all links and everything to the book in the show notes as well if people want to check that out. So thank you so much for your time today, and I'm sure we'll have you back on the podcast to talk about the new book as well.
An absolute pleasure, Aoife. Thank you very much.
That was Ariel O'Farrell, and we talked all about values. If you want to get involved in the conversation, I would love to hear your thoughts on LinkedIn. I also go live weekly on LinkedIn with the latest podcast guest to discuss some of the top line areas and answer any questions that people have as well in relation to that latest podcast. So if we're not already connected on LinkedIn, feel free to connect with me there. In summarizing some of the key points that we spoke about, we talked about the definition of values and what it actually means. And For me, really, and, you know, tying in with what Ariel has said as well, it's the things that are the standards that you hold yourself and others to, that you invest additional time and energy into maintaining those standards. We spoke as well about this concept of positional values, and the example shared was this idea of fairness. So most people want to be treated fairly, but if you have a value of fairness, it means that you would hope that you would treat other people fairly as well, and you will invest time in making sure that others are also treated fairly as well as yourself. We spoke about the importance of values, and when we don't have clear values at work, then there's this low level of conflict, or even when our values don't align with those at work. And I know certainly I have had experience of that, where there's this low level of constant conflict. And as we discussed, it depends on whether you want to tolerate that ongoing or whether you want to move on. We spoke about the difference between having clearly stated values versus the lived experience. So how do those values actually show up in the workplace? Is it how decisions are being made? Is it how you witness people's behavior? And if it's not, then there's a difference there. And people detect that, and it erodes trust at work as well. We spoke about the importance of the exec team being really clear on their personal values, having high level of self-awareness and being vulnerable to actually share those. It takes time to really understand what your core values are. We spoke about the importance of ranking those values so that you know in which order those values are to be lived. And when it comes to decision making, how decisions get made, which value is more important. We also touched on this idea of attraction and recruitment and making sure that you are attracting the right people into your organization. And those are the people whose values reflect your own values. So not the values that you talk about, but the actual behavior that exists. Because if you attract people into the organization and there is a conflict in those values, it's not likely that those people will stay in the organization for very long. There's a huge amount of energy and effort when that fit is not right. And I know because I've experienced that firsthand. We touched on this idea of having maybe some more general or generally accepted values, if you like, things like respect, authenticity, honesty, integrity, and trust. And is there a necessary baseline that needs to exist in all organizations? Because let's face it, everyone would like to be treated with respect. They would like to feel that they can be their full selves at work, that people tell them the truth, that they act in accordance with what they believe is right, and that they can be trusted. Ariel and I probably could have stayed chatting about values all day, let's be honest. But one thing that we didn't touch on was how to actually come up with the values. She does cover that in the book, and it's something that I do with my clients as well. It's this idea of thinking about, well, what's important to you? How have you made decisions in the past? Which decisions worked out well? Which decisions did you maybe have a gut feeling that it wasn't the right thing to do? But also you can flip it on its head and say, what are the things that really bother me, especially at work? What kind of things annoy me? What kind of things really grate on my nerves? And it's usually because someone is going against your values in some way. So if you think about the opposite of what that thing might be, or think about the reason why you're getting so worked up about that issue, it's probably because someone is going against your own standards. Another way that Ariel touches on in the book is this idea of seeing a list of values and ranking them and pulling them out and grouping them together. So that's another way that you can approach it. Another thing really worth mentioning at this point, I think, is the fact that up until a few years ago, I had no idea what my values are, or I had no idea what my values were, should I say. And if someone had asked me, I probably wouldn't have a clue. The thing is, we all have inherent values. They are values that don't change throughout our life. They are constant. But oftentimes people aren't aware of what they are, but they know when someone or something is going against their values. So if you at the moment don't know what your values are, it's definitely worth investing the time and the energy in figuring out exactly what it is, because it does result in a much happier work environment And you will be much happier in your personal life as well once you're really, really clear on what those core values are. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Happier at Work podcast. I'm delighted to have you here. If you enjoyed this podcast, I'd love if you could rate or review the podcast or share it with a friend. You'll find me on the website happieratwork.ie.